only thing certain in life is change. Change is necessary. We must evolve or face extinction.
NXT is about the future.
It's new ideas and youthful exuberance.
Paige has just won the Divas Championship.
A celebration of the exceptional.
The super athlete.
It's like a new voice speaking to your soul.
Follow the buzzer.
Change is absolute.
It's like NXT is taking over the world.
Maybe that time is right now. Time for change our way. In a cold, calculated, exceedingly hostile takeover.
Place to be nation, welcome to another episode of PTV NXT, and tonight it's a takeover. Very special episode of PTV NXT. So without further ado, let me welcome in my my co-host, my friends, lovers, the Brooks and Dunn, my Brooks and Dunn, my Julia and Bridget, Tim Capel and Jennifer Smith. How are y'all?
Doing good, Jake. How you doing?
Ooh, a lot of deep cuts, a lot of nice references there. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. So I think that the first thing we should talk about is the fact that this podcast somehow has a t-shirt. I think
yes.
That's big news.
Ah.
And a coffee sure mug. Does.
And a coffee mug, if you so choose.
And a hoodie.
Yeah.
And where can people find these things?
So I believe that would be on tpublic.com/user/placetobewrestlingnetwork. And you can find shirts for all many fine podcasts here on the Place to Be Wrestling feed, including the podcast you're listening to now.
And
wouldn't you just love to be decked out in a PTB NXT shirt while you're dancing in and out of the light under a neon moon?
Who wouldn't?
Perhaps by yourself, but that's okay.
Socially distanced, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, and we encourage
you
that.
Watch your broken dreams from like 6 feet away.
Clearly.
Yeah, exactly. Wonderful song. But anyway, so please check out the T Public store. You can just go in there and find Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network, and you'll find shirts for pretty much every wrestling show, I think. Maybe besides a few. Jenny, you have Jenny in the Gyms has a shirt. You guys have a Talking WCW shirt. So many awesome shirts. I wanted to cover that off the top because we're very excited. We have a big show, a monumental show, a historical show to cover on this episode. But before we do, we will do our every episode tradition of coming up with our new developmental names because I'm not going to lie. I don't know if our ones from last month really got over. I really think they went over like a proverbial fart in church.
Yeah, we were not impressed.
Real Leo Kruger situation here, where they've just got to send that back to developmental and bring the guy back and try to do better.
So, Tim, would you mind reminding us before we get our new gimmicks from Creative what our previous names were last month?
Yes, and I feel like these three individuals could be in a stable. They all have kind of a similar vibe in that there's not a ton of diversity in terms of like gimmicks or characters that are conjured in your head. So see if you perhaps pick up a theme here. Jake, you are currently known as Lenny Drizzler. And Jenny, you are, and I believe this was an edit on the fly, but Your cat spread sauce.
Right. Yes.
And I am the legendary Rolls Feeble.
From Degrassi.
Okay. Okay. That one's yeah. pretty good.
Yeah, that's my Degrassi.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Certainly don't sound like the Four Horsemen.
You're going to hit up the Dot after school.
So I think the stable would definitely be like basically like a modern job squad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
With Feeble and Drizzler.
Drizzler and Sauce.
Not striking fear to the heart.
Real brown world order here. this reinvention of the BWO.
Okay, so I have our first new one that I just generated. So this is hot off the presses, ooh, which I think may be in danger of copyright infringement from a very notable franchise that is near and dear to Tim's heart. So apparently I will now be Howie Simpson.
Howie Simpson, okay.
Which seems dangerously close to Homer Simpson.
Howie, all right. Well, you can't argue with the name generator. It does what it does.
Right.
No regard for copyrights or trademarks.
And I mean, let's face it, we're in developmental, so we're at the totem pole. If, you know, Papa H could kick us out and then we're back on the indies, you know, so just got to deal with it.
Get what you get.
All right. All right. Our next name. So I think we usually go, Tim, are you usually second?
I feel like, yeah.
Yeah. All right. You are now going to be Ricardo Bennett.
Oh, I don't know if I can pull off a Ricardo or a Bennett, but
so this we'll is try. Confusing because Ricardo would maybe think you maybe have some kind of lucha connection, but then Bennett not so much.
Yeah, well, that's not stereotype.
Well, in the world of wrestling, that's kind of how it works.
Oh, I'm so scared for my.
Be afraid,
yes, right. I don't know what to think.
Okay, this is a gym right here. So this type people will get behind. Okay, Jenny, you're going to be, and I honestly think this is like a unisex name. It could work for male, female. So you will now be Trunk Mitchell.
Trunk?
Trunk.
I'm all right with it. Yeah, I'm good with that.
Mitchell. Wow.
I definitely feel like you have like a Rikishi-style large derriere.
Ass-based offense, yes.
Yes, exactly.
Trunk-based offense, if you will.
Trunk-official.
Hopefully they give you Mojo finisher.
I mean, you went to like Trunk. I went to like Drunk, obviously.
Honestly, you know what? It's a better name than like Cheeks. Thing from early...
Yeah.
From early TNA.
I like Cheeks better with a Z. Or
I like Cheeks, but I'm just thinking that same dude, if you called him Trunk Mitchell, I don't know, it kind of does it for me.
Like right. I could hear the NXT crowd, Trunk. Like I could see it working, you know. Now on the main roster,
yeah,
I don't know
well,
if it'll get
Cheeks
over.
If Cheeks jumped to NXT, he would definitely be Trunk Mitchell.
Cheeks.
And Jenny is obviously Trunk Mitchell.
Right. So just to recap, Howie Simpson, very close to Homer Simpson, Ricardo Bennett, which and Trunk Mitchell. I could also see Trunk Mitchell being like, yeah, like you'd be like a hoss, maybe, you know, like just
right.
Like the Ascension if they didn't suck, kind of, you know.
Maybe a modern day sort of Bertha Faye. Or like a Rhonda Singh, where it's a perhaps a woman of larger stature, but can still really go. And
not sure I like where you're going with this.
Well, not to say that you are any of these
right.
things.
Right. Obviously.
But your gimmick sort of speaks to this. So it just depends on how into the character I guess you want to get.
Well, if I'm gonna, you know. I'm going to go full method.
You're going to go full method.
Yeah.
It definitely has the most potential of all these names, does Trunk Mitchell.
I think so, too. Howie Simpson is clearly a jobber. Like, no shot.
A little bit. Ricardo Bennett, like we're just not sure what's going on. But probably a jobber, but has maybe some breakout potential. remains to be seen.
All right. Well, those are developmental names. We'll do our best to get them over. But we have, like I mentioned, we have a very big show. Before we get into it, let's talk about the build to this, because these shows, like, we don't get many of them. Like, the last one we had was Arrival, which I want to say was a good, like, 2 months of TV at least since the last one we had, I want to say. So how were y'all feeling going into the show? Like, were you hyped for it? Do you feel like it was built well? When it ran down the card, were you excited for the card? What were your feelings going into this? Because we've been building to it for quite a while.
I would say my feelings were mixed. If I'm looking at the card, I'm thinking Camacho, Adam Rose, The Ascension. I don't know how I feel about that. Sammy, everybody loves Sammy and Tyler. Like, you know, now you're talking my language. Nat and Charlotte, you know, we've watched the whole tournament, so you feel like you want to see how that plays out, and it's for the championship, so there's some interest building there. And then you have your, you know, your main event with Neville and Tyson, and that seems like a solid match. We like Neville a lot, so it's definitely mixed for me. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, mixed is definitely the word that comes to mind when I look at this, because the matches that seem like they would deliver on paper have kind of gotten the least build. Tyson and Neville, I mean, yeah, they've done an okay job of building Tyson Kidd up, but it's really just been in the past, I'd say, 2 to 3 weeks worth of TV where he's kind of broken out. Mm-hmm. But we've had a lot of TV to get to this point, right? So it's not like this long, drawn-out storyline between these two. Honestly, I feel like Camacho and Adam Rose probably have more history. This little silly
that's
TV
not
feud.
Wrong.
You know what I mean? Like, but that's not a match that you really look forward to for a takeover. No. It's just like, okay, it makes sense. They're going to pay that off on a big show, but I kind of don't care about the outcome one way or another. It's just nice to see it given a little bit of shine here. The Ascension and El Local, Kalisto, the new team challenging them. You know, we've been tracking that, I guess, about across 2 weeks of television, really. And still, not much of a build, but it works because I think the story is that the Ascension need competition and need an actual team to face. So, in a way, like, the lack of build almost serves it. And then you've got Breeze and Zane as a bit of an afterthought, but looks really pretty good on paper. Like, we've seen them have matches on the weekly television and torn the place down. And then sort of you've got Charlotte and Natalya. That feels like a match with, like, a proper build, because they did do the women's tournament, which, say what you will about that, but it was an actual tournament with a destination of, we're going to do the finals at this event called TakeOver. And that's been kind of a slow burn. So that, I think, has had the most proper traditional sort of build, that women's match, and the rest is sort of your mileage varies.
Yeah, I'm roughly in the same boat as y'all. Like, I thought it was, like, looking at it, I was like, this would probably be pretty good. Like, a solid show, because they don't really have a ton of people that, at this point, where you're like, okay, that's a guaranteed banger. You know what I mean? Like, Sammy, like, okay, that's good. Like, Breeze, but we haven't really seen Breeze enough to really know how much he can go. You have, like, a still pretty young, like, you know, not that established Charlotte. We have Neville, who's obviously put in some good stuff. So it's kind of up and down. It's not like you had this, like, loaded card or anything. So I went in, I was like, this will probably be solid. So I just wanted to see how, as we go through this and when we wrap it up, like, how does it compare? Like, after we watched it, how did it compare to what we thought going in with the build and everything? Mm-hmm. So this is the, I called it TakeOver OG because I didn't know what else to call it, because technically it is the first TakeOver. I think retroactively they call Arrival a TakeOver, but we watched it. I don't remember them calling it a TakeOver whenever. Mm-hmm. This is the first TakeOver which should kind of be their namesake going forward. We get this video package, which I thought was really well done, and it's kind of continuing to establish NXT's identity as like it being about change and like the future and sort of like that it's a revolution and that sort of thing, which is good. I'm glad they're giving them an identity outside of just, you know, oh, it's a developmental, which is cool. Any thoughts on the opening? And also, we established quickly that our commentary team is going to be what I think we've established as the A-team, which is William Regal, Tom Phillips, and Byron Saxton. So none of the not-so-good commentary people.
Yeah, no Rich Brennan here. No Renee, bless her heart. No Matt Albert or whatever they call him.
Fat Albert.
Yeah, so we do have the A-team on well, I'll put it this way. We have Regal on commentary. So
yes.
You put Regal in there in the mix with anybody, and that's your A-team.
I agree.
I like the video package. I thought it was really cool. And yeah, I was relieved to not have some of that dead weight on commentary, because I felt like we struggled the last couple weeks on TV with the commentary, so this was good.
Yeah, and the commentary, as we'll get into, I thought was really, really good on the show. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm.
So we start off with Adam Rose, who is actually like all the way in the parking lot, which I thought was a cool way to change up. It's like one thing I noticed immediately, because they have to do something to make this seem bigger, because they are shooting it in the same exact.
Right.
They're still in Full Sail at this point, even for TakeOver. So they have to do something to make it look different and distinguish it from a regular episode of TV. So this was cool to give a cooler entrance. So he's coming all the way from the parking lot with his rosebuds, making their way into the building. I felt like the crowd was a lot more lit than we normally see on TV. Like, they wanted to emphasize the crowd, I guess, and make it at least seem bigger, at least to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it. Just overall, I thought they did a good job. You could tell right from the beginning, like, shooting it, they were trying to make it look different and look a little bit bigger. Like, I feel like they had more elaborate lighting. The screen, I don't know if it was just the way they shot it, looked bigger. It was everything they were trying to make it seem like it was some different and bigger event, despite it still being in the same exact place that they always are, which I thought was smart.
Yeah, they definitely did a nice job of just polishing up Full Sail. I almost called it the Performance Center, dear God. this is what 2020 has done to us. But no, they definitely sort of, it feels like they gave it a new coat of paint, even though it is the same old that we've seen week after week. You almost forget that it's Full Sail, like just the way that it's presented and the production being just that much different. Like, they put more effort into it. It's not just doesn't look like that almost studio type of show that we're used to seeing on the weekly television.
And aside from those things, they also, with some of the camera work and some of the shots that they set up, and two specific examples we'll talk about later, but I thought they did a good job at, like, even trying to be a little bit bigger with cool angles and shots.
Yep, direction's a little bit different too, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just felt like a big show. Or, I mean, as big as a show can be when it's in a tiny, you know, for what it is, but... So our opener, as Adam Rose makes his way to the ring, he has this big grudge match with Camacho, which, as Tim kind of alluded to earlier, has been simmering for quite a while based on Camacho attacking Captain Comic and just Jody harassing Adam. Yes, which oddly will come into play later in the show. But anyway, so this is a big feud that's been building, as Camacho has taken exception to the way Adam Rose parties and has harassed him and the Rosebuds. So Camacho, I really don't like his gear, because even here he has his like khaki slacks on, which that can't be comfortable. He's going to chafe. I don't know. I feel like he needs better gear. But anyway, he comes in super hot. He kind of takes advantage earlier. He's kind of slapping Adam Rose around. He puts on like a chin lock variation where he's kind of using Rose's own arm, which Regal calls a necktie. So thanks, Regal, for letting me know what the hell we call that. And so eventually, like after getting beat up, it's like the whole first segment of the match is Camacho on top, and Rose is kind of like doing the face in peril thing. Then finally, he kind of does his Adam Rose version of like hulking up. But then Camacho kind of cuts that off, so we continue to build sympathy. And already the crowd, like, even for this, like, they were really into it. I thought it was smart to have Adam Rose come out with his interest as, like, the first thing on the show, because the crowd was super fired up. And so, finally, Rose hits, like, a super nice spine buster. I thought that looked good. And he kind of makes his comeback, and then he wins with the party foul. I thought this was kind of like a decent little opener. Like we said, at least has, maybe if it was sort of a silly like feud going into it, at least had something building to it. Kind of just had your tried and true face heel sort of dynamic. It was basic, but okay. Like, just your baby face is on the bottom. He works his way back up. He makes a comeback, like takes a beating and makes a comeback, hits all his signature moves. And I thought it really worked well. It's like just an opening match to get the crowd kind of happy to see kind of a happy-go-lucky face. And he is pretty over with the crowd to see him go over. So I went 2 stars. Decent little opener.
Yeah. That's very generous of you, Jake. And maybe maybe it's just my Adam Rose bias, because I've in the past not been very happy with him. But I thought it was fairly disappointing as an opener. I get it, because you want the party atmosphere, you know, you basically you want his entrance to be your opening part of the show, but unfortunately that also leads to a match that he's in. So I didn't like it that much. It felt like a TV match to me. Like, this looked like as much work as you've done already trying to make this look like a big show, and then you put this match on. Like, what are we doing? We need something a little bit better in this opening slot. I feel like this is not worthy of the first match of the first takeover ever. The spinebuster did look good to his credit, but the ending when he rolled him up was sloppy. So I'm at 1.75 stars.
Oh, I like it. You penalized it a 1/4 star there.
I did.
I love it. I love that you've turned on Adam Rose too. Yeah. Like, you were high on him at first, and then it just sort of, like, the honeymoon period was over very quickly, I feel like, with
your head. It must have been, like, beer goggles or something, like, I woke up the next day, I'm like, oh, God, what have I done?
Yeah, well, to see war off.
Exactly.
The rave was over, you're like, wait, what's going on?
Like, why
is there a guy dressed up like Waldo?
Why am I in this cornfield? So I don't disagree with either of you. I did think this was a good choice of opener, in that it's going to keep the crowd pretty hot. I mean, they're going to go up for Adam Rose, and it doesn't overstay its welcome. Like, they're sensible to only give it like maybe 5 minutes. But your expectation may be, when watching a wrestling show, a good wrestling show at that, a major supercard, if you will, pay-per-view or whatever we're calling this, that your opener is going to give you like some pretty good, like, actual wrestling, which this does not do. So on that basis, it's not like a super great choice of opener, but compared to the rest of the card, I think I would like give this the green light, because I wouldn't want to burn off like Zane Breeze this early, you know what I mean? So you sort of had limited options, and this will at least keep the crowd hot, so I'm a bit more forgiving. Match itself is, I mean, neither here nor there. I believe this is where Adam Rose debuts his, what I have termed, Bugs Bunny offense. There's that spot where he literally jumps into Kamasha's arms.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's worth a pop. That's like worth a star, I guess. And yeah, you know, get that spine buster. You get that. I thought this execution on the party foul, his finisher, was pretty good for a move that usually looks like the person delivering it is just falling flat on his own face. I thought this actually looked kind of decent. So I went ahead and just gave it the 2 stars. It's like, it's good enough. It's perfectly fine. I'm not going to be offended by it. But I can see where you're coming from too, Jenny. So
okay, good.
We're all real close there.
Yeah, I know what you're saying too. It's almost like there's two ways that they usually think of Oprah. Is like you have the, you know, rockers or an express, mm-hmm. you know, mindset where it's mm-hmm. like send them out there for like 20 minutes and like exactly. And then there's the other school, which I guess it's kind of fitting of NXT at this point in that they're kind of they almost like structure things in an old school way where it's like, look, let's, it's almost like a house show, like send right. something out there, like it's kind of, you know, somebody like they don't stay out there too long right. and then we move on and kind of just let the card ascend. And so, but I know what you mean, especially when you're, as these would continue, you're conditioned to like the opener being a banger and really just mm-hmm. the whole, that becoming the identity of TakeOver as a show is that it's just nonstop, just banger matches the whole time. Where, like, now they're kind of still in this mode of, like, I guess, like, a variety show sort of thing, for mm-hmm. lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we have Adam Rose, who's a goofball, and then we have these people who really wrestle, and, mm-hmm. yeah. So, I know it's, I definitely understand your point.
But I don't think it's an issue of time, either, because if they had given this mm-hmm. 10 minutes, it's not like it would have been better. Like, it would have been a lot worse.
Right, yeah, definitely. I think
so, you know what I mean?
Perish
so, yeah, I think that definitely helped smart about. For me.
Yeah. They were smart in how they laid it out, I think.
True. All right, so we carry on. We get a recap of Sammy's last few months. He speaks about his feud he had with Cesaro where he was losing and how he's kind of been on tough luck. And then he kind of pivots into talking about his opponent, which is Tyler Breeze. And his thesis of this is basically Tyler Breeze is not his kind of guy. And he kind of does this kind of humble laugh, but sort of like, he's like, no, he's just not my kind of guy. We're just different. It's just like super obvious that they're different. Like, it's just funny. Like just to see him, like, he doesn't want to just completely be mean because it's not his character, yeah. but he's just like, yeah, like we've seen him do this a few times, like where he's just like, well, you know what? It's not like I hate the guy, but you know, I kind of hate him. But I thought this was a good way to like show the contrast, and I just, and this is something they're going to keep up throughout the show. I like these sort of sit down interview video package things that they have for most of the matches on here. I don't know. I thought it was really well done to have like him sitting there talking about it, interspersed with like clips. It kind of gets you up to speed, and I don't know. I just, what did y'all think of that as like a format for these pre-show kind of video packages, like the sit down interview style?
Well, I thought that for Sammy here and for this match, it was a great touch because here again, this is something that hasn't gotten a lot of build. As popular as Sammy is and has been, he hasn't, you know, gotten a ton of shine in terms of like his actual wins and losses. So they're making clear that the stakes are high going into this, and they tell us that this match, I believe unannounced previously, is for the number one contendership, mm-hmm. which is a pretty big deal. And it makes all the sense in the world too, because these are two guys who basically lost that triple threat match, for the actual number one contendership going in that, Tyson Kidd won. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like, rather than treating them as kind of the leftovers, the afterthought, which is what this match seemed to be going in, they said, oh no, we're going to go ahead and make this a number one contenders match. And it's off to the races after that. We're going to know right away after this show who the next challenger is going to be to whoever the champion is leaving this first TakeOver event. So I really like that. As kind of abrupt as it seemed, just to, you know, that could feel tacked on, but I didn't think it did in this case. I thought it really lent the match some really good stakes, and this video package did a nice job of humanizing Sami Zayn, which mm-hmm. I think has been the goal throughout his NXT tenure, to get over the fact that, as Aaron George would say, he feels like a human being, right?
Yes.
He's having very human reactions to what's going on around him. Like, he feels like a dude who, this is how a person would react under these circumstances. So I just really appreciate that. And he's, you know, it just plays to his strengths so much. So, nice little video package here.
I agree with all of that, and very well said. I didn't know if maybe, like, I was kind of reading into this I don't know if you guys maybe got this idea or not, but it just feels like the way that he kept saying, like, you know, we're just different people. We're just like, you know, we're just different. I kept thinking he meant gay.
Oh.
I mean, so like, I think he thinks that Tyler is gay.
And I feel like I'm predisposed to look for those sort of things. I can't say I was struck by that, but that's not a, that's the, I don't think that's an invalid interpretation necessarily.
I mean, I like Sammy, and so I just, you know, I'm like, yeah, you know, maybe I'm just being weird about it, so it's fine.
It's wrestling. You really can't give him too much credit, right?
He did a good job. I like the package, so it's good.
Yeah, I just kind of read it. To me, it felt like he was saying, like, well, I'm kind of a humble kind of blue collar, I guess, sort of guy, and this guy's super vain, but maybe I'm just being innocent and hopeful.
Yeah.
I think I'm used to, like, 1996 Sting calling Steve Regal prissy and a sissy and not the most subtle, like... Yeah. I'm used to wrestling not being that subtle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a lot of baggage for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I could definitely sort of see that reading. I just don't want to. I don't want to ascribe that to Sammy, I guess.
Me.
Yeah, and I think maybe who he is like in real life kind of like is coloring my view of him as a wrestler too. Because in real life, he's like the complete. You know,
this very kind of worldly culture.
Yeah. Person. Yeah, exactly. So, all right. But we'll see them. We'll continue because that match is not next. We actually get the Ascension finally facing maybe some worthy competition, because they're going to face Kalisto El Locale, who recently debuted, as Tim said earlier, only like a couple weeks ago. So this has not had a ton of time to build. But at least it is something. It seems like some kind of contender for the Ascension. So they start off, they kind of, the Ascension are sort of cutting off everything Kalisto and El Locale are doing, because they're obviously a lot bigger and more powerful. I did think they had a cool spot where they kind of cut off the dives, where they were going for the dives and the Ascension hit them with the uppercuts, which I guess some people will maybe not like that because it might seem choreographed, but it was still a pretty cool spot and it made
good
sense.
Heel heat and kind segment, of, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of showed the contrast in the teams. Yeah, what you said?
No, I was just going to say that was one of those camera angles that was really cool. Mm-hmm. Like, you could tell they kind of set it up, but I was fine because it looked amazing.
Right.
Shot from behind like that.
Yeah, and like I said, I know some people kind of that would bother them, but it didn't bother me. So then we kind of go into Kalisto getting beaten down, which I thought he played that well. I think he's a good face in peril. Mm-hmm. And then he finally hits the hot tag to El Locale, who unfortunately is not as good of a hot tag guy as Kalisto was, because he comes in. And unfortunately for El Locale, he's trying to work what I feel like is a high-flying lucha style, but his physique is a little bit too close to mine to be able to pull off such maneuvers. So he cannot get a lot of elevation on his move. So his lucha offense, like, he hits a springboard that looked pretty rough. Like, I just felt like he couldn't elevate on a lot of the stuff, and so eventually he gets cut off, and then the Ascension do their thing and they end up winning with the Fall of Man, I believe is how they won. So this kind of felt to me like it disappointed me, and that I was hoping for a little bit more, in that it felt sort of like an extended squash to me. They kind of did more of like a tag formula, but in the end, it was kind of just like, I really never had any, like, there was never a point in the match where I thought the Ascension were really in danger. They might lose. I thought it was a good, like, fade. Kalisto for me was like the highlight of the match, even though I kind of had issue because they never really, he was good as face and peril, but we really never got to see him like pull out his like arsenal that we've seen him showcase a little bit on TV, like all his cool moves, which to me, if they could have made So it's almost like they just need two Kalistos. He needs to be the face in peril and the hot tag.
Yeah, because like I would have been that too.
Yeah, because like he clipped. My main takeaway from this is it wasn't a great match, but he has a future. Like, he definitely is talented, and he needs to kind of do his own thing. So I was hoping for more from this one. So overall, it's just kind of disappointing. I wanted more Kalisto, and I was hoping for just more of an actual match for this one. So I went a star and a half on this one, which may be a little harsh. Maybe it's just my disappointment, and you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really disagree. Remind me again, El Locale is Ricardo Rodriguez. Rodriguez.
Chuck Mitchell.
Right, Ricardo, so.
It might have been a little better.
Yeah, I don't know, he had a trunk on him.
I understand the logic in doing that extended face and peril segment on Kalisto. He's a good choice for that, but it does rob him of some of the flashy stuff that you want to see in a Kalisto match against the Ascension or anyone, really. And I mean, I guess this does answer the question of, can the Ascension really rise to the challenge of an actual team? But that's being still pretty charitable to Kalisto and El Locale.
Right.
So I don't know that it's totally answered some of our criticisms that we've had against the Ascension here. I mean, I'm glad that it's not just local talent here once again facing these guys in a squash.
El Locale talent.
Yeah, but it's still like El Locale. Right. But compare this to the match that they had with Too Cool on Arrival, and it's sort of like,
right,
is this really like any better? Are they right. more competitive? Not really. And we ding that for Too Cool, like even getting any offense really. And this, you sort of wanted to see not quite a total back and forth match, but just a little something. It's still, I feel like they still didn't pull it off. So I gave it a star and three quarters. Like, I sort of Jenny's logic of dinging it at like maybe worth two stars, but because I don't really feel like they fulfilled their objective here, I kind of penalized it.
Why could we not just switch their Kalisto and El Locale's roles in the match? Have El Locale get his ass beat by the Ascension. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he could bump around probably better than Kalisto with that belly. I mean, just, you know, just bounce him right off there. So just have him beat the shit out of El Locale, get the hot tag to Kalisto, let him get his better looking aerial moves in than surely what we've seen El Locale do. And then I think you fix that match. But as it was, the Ascension did look a tad bit better. Like, they're still like super dominant over these guys. But they actually did like some fairly entertaining, like actual wrestling. So I thought they kind of elevated just a tad. I did go ahead and give it the two, because it was not boring. It was a good length, and so I just, you know, I was generous, I think, with these guys.
Well, we've been hard on the Ascension, so I think we sort of look for more from them, and we also perhaps look for any opportunity to criticize, but this is what we've been given. And I guess I understand, to some extent, the logic of El Locale is going to get the hot tag because he's the bigger guy. It's just sort of the basic tag team formula. But you're right, Jenny, in that if he's going to make the big comeback for his team, but still try to do the high flying stuff that Kalisto is better at, then why not reverse those roles? You're absolutely right. If he's like, I can understand if he's like this power offense guy who's going to come in there and start hitting spine busters and power bombs and shit, but you know, there's he's just like a worse version of Kalisto. Yeah, right? He's like a bigger verse, way worse version of Kalisto. So why take that approach?
And I would argue you could send your big man in first. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Send him in first, not save him. And it makes even more sense.
Yeah. Have him fall on his face because nobody cares about him anyway.
Exactly.
Be like, oh shit, well, you know, this is not what they don't even have a tag team name. This is not what Kalisto and El Cal planned going in, but you know, and he gets his shit pushed in.
Yeah, I think to have any chance of like having credibility where you think Kalisto and El Cal could win, they would need a lot more build to like establish them.
Oh, for sure.
And you'd really have, you know what I mean? So it's just my main takeaway is the Ascension still are disappointing to me because I usually, the way they're booked is usually like, I love, like, I'm usually like all about it. Yeah. When it's like guys coming in and they're just dominant and stuff, but they just don't click. They just seem boring to me. And
yeah, I agree.
I'm glad we're all on the same page. It's not like, it's not us not getting the booking. Like we're on board with, this is how you book like a dominant, almost 80s style tactic, like a Road Warriors type of approach, but they're just not getting there.
Mm-hmm. They don't do promos. We don't see them talk or anything. Like they're just like nothing.
Yeah, the charisma is not really there. Like it's don't really have an awesome, you know, powerhouse offense. Really, I mean, the Fall of Man is okay, but it's
those
just
chops were pretty good.
Yeah, chops okay. But it's just sort of like they almost feel like just generic WCW Saturday Night heel tag team.
They seem like a impoverished version of a team that we're going to see on NXT, another Road Warriors, you know, S team that I think does it a whole lot better. I'm not sure when they're going to come around, but at some point, if we ever get there, well, I think there's a team that pulls this off much better. But I want to see more Kalisto for sure. That was my main takeaway. Give us more Kalisto. Let him do like some spot fest matches, and I would love it. So next up, we get the Tyler Breeze package kind of to go along with the Sami Zayn package. So the first part of it, it was super well done, but it kind of established what we kind of already know about Tyler Breeze. Like he says, I love the not every camera. Everybody has a camera, but it's not always staring at someone gorgeous. So that was a good Tyler Breeze line. So they kind of, the first part is like what we've already established about him. But like Tim mentioned earlier, I really love the second half of this because that is when they started to push that beyond just his gimmick. And they started talking about how, like putting him over as a wrestler. And like, he says something like, don't let this pretty face make you think I can't win and all this kind of stuff. Like basically putting over his motivation as a wrestler that he does want to win. He's not just about his looks and everything, which I thought was a really awesome touch. And it kind of makes him a more full character, like Tim mentioned earlier, like more like an actual human. Like, so now it's like, okay, he does want to win. His thing is not just he wants to look good and, you know, take selfies, but he really is a competitor. So I thought that was a nice touch. And it still allowed him to contrast with Sammy, but, you know, kind of gave us a little bit more into who he is. So I thought this was really well done, just like the Sammy one.
Tyler Breeze continues to nail his character. And he just owned the whole promo. He was fantastic.
Yeah, I really like this. And it kind of draws a line under what his character is now. This is something that they started emphasizing with Tyler Breeze, I would say, like, post-arrival, where he didn't really have much to do there other than get wrecked by Rusev.
Yeah.
Where it was, like, it was very subtle at first, and they talked about on commentary how he has taken more of a serious turn in terms of his direction and his wrestling career. Like, it, sort of the modeling stuff is kind of off to the side. He wants to take the wrestling more seriously now, and he's not afraid to get hit in the face like he was before. And this is just basically saying, this is the type of guy who wants to have it all, wants to have the looks, the personality, all of the accolades, but also the ability in the ring and just kind of that serious drive as well. And it all just kind of pulls that together in a way that really works for me. And what could be a very, which started out as a pretty one, albeit entertaining, but one-dimensional type of character. It's all kind of going to places that I didn't quite expect. And it honestly don't remember from watching NXT in this period. Like, I can officially say, like, I am a Tyler Breeze mark in a way that I was not in 2014 watching these back.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yep, I agree. And I think, like what Tim just said about Tyler Breeze, I think it continues throughout the show with some other people that we'll get to. Like, I think it's a strength of this whole show. Mm-hmm. Like, what they just, like, how what they do with Tyler Breeze in that package, I think they do throughout the show. But mm-hmm. So we have a big match. Like we said, this is the number one contender match for the NXT title, Sami Zayn versus Tyler Breeze, based on the fallout from the triple threat. I definitely, and I think it's a benefit to how NXT does TV that even though, like Tim said earlier, this didn't have a ton of build, like they kind of just threw the number one contender out here. I think when they do TV like they do, where these two guys, like they obviously have been in matches and stuff, but never really like, we haven't really seen them one-on-one, or if they did, maybe it was like one time, but it's an, it, they haven't faced each other enough for it's like, it feels like, oh, here they go again, Sami Zayn versus Tyler Breeze.
For sure.
Yeah, it feels like a big match because they've both been established as, like, you know, upper guys in NXT, and you don't really see them go against each other. There's big stakes because it's for the title, and the title feels like it means something. So to me, it's when this pays off. Like, that's why you slog through, you know, maybe some kind of ho-hum episodes and parts of the TV, and, like, this is where it pays off when you get a big match and it feels like a big deal. Swank blue gear for Tyler, which I really liked. I thought his gear looked pretty awesome. So we start off, he works, Breeze works the arm, but Sami kind of turns the tide and kind of does the same. A lot of sort of feeling out. And I liked how in the early part, Regal puts over that kind of what we said in the video package. He just reemphasizes that Tyler Breeze obviously cares about winning, even if he doesn't always show it. Just continuing to try and build that character. So that's one of our, you know, many great Regal lines throughout this entire show. I really liked how, so after they kind of feel it out, Tyler Breeze gets a little more aggressive, starts laying in some strikes. Sami hits a springboard, and I really like Breeze's selling on that. He made it look like you're really connected. And then, so they basically start gradually moving out to like bigger and bigger spots and bigger moves. Like Sami starts pulling out the big guns, they did like a, what was it? Like I put a double like leg toss up powerbomb thing by Breeze. I don't know what the hell you would call that, but it was
that
awesome.
Sounds accurate to me.
Oh, when he pulled him out from the ropes and yeah, hit him with the sit out powerbomb.
Yeah.
Normally you see a guy get yanked off the ropes like that and they just do like a flat back pancake kind of thing. And I never know what that move is called on its own, but for him to transition into a power bomb looked pretty awesome.
Yeah, and so we continue, and like I said, it's just like they're kind of trading big spots. We get a I described it again, this is a crazy suplex power bomb deal.
Yes.
So it's like he picks him up for like a suplex but then lifts him all the way up and hits him with a power bomb. And I think that was one where I was like, you know, they do a lot of counters. Tyler hits a super kick, and this is maybe where I think some of people of this style of match would probably say maybe the kickouts, maybe some like the suplex powerbomb maybe should have ended it. But Regal, being the genius that he is and why he's so awesome, he covers for it by saying the reason that the big crazy powerbomb suplex thing didn't end it is because he didn't use a he calls it a double leg Nelson, which is basically like when you roll up both legs. So he kind of covers and says, Regal says, that's why it didn't end it. In any other case, it would have ended the match, but he didn't hook both legs. So good job by Regal of kind of not.
Also, if I can push up my glasses for a minute here.
Yes. Yes. Please do.
I just figuratively
did.
Not wearing glasses. So that was, I think what you're talking about was the, I think it's called a double pump handle Orange Crush power bomb, which the only reason I know that is because when he did it and it was kind of botched in this match, I was like, I feel like he was going for something there and it didn't quite come off, and then they tried to save it, which they did a decent enough job of salvaging it. And I'm like, that's some kind of move he used to do in that, like, Tyler Breeze couldn't really pull off on his own. So I looked it up, and sure enough, it was like, okay, he used to do this move. Yeah. Sami Zayn, when he was El Generico, used to do this in the indies, and it's one of those stupid indie-rific moves, which with a really, like, contrived bullshit setup with that, again, double pump handle deal. But, like, the Orange Crush powerbomb is, that's, like, a legit move. Like, if that's all he did, like, it would look sick as shit. But that setup was just ridiculous. Yeah, I think Regal was trying to cover for that a little bit, probably being familiar with Zayn's work and recognizing that and sort of being like, I don't think that came off well. But,
yeah.
I mean, a lot of people wouldn't know what that move was supposed to be in the first place, so...
I was going
to
say, that's a deep cut.
Yeah. Like,
you wouldn't,
Right, and it was like, if you didn't recognize that, like, that's something he used to do, and it... usually comes off a lot smoother. Like, it would have just been, oh, this weird kind of counter for counter sequence that ended in a wacky looking powerbomb. So that was a sort of a nice dodge, I thought, on Regal's part, if indeed that's what it was.
Thank you for covering for my Vince McMahon commentary, my What a Maneuver.
I don't know exactly what it's called either, if it has an official name. It's just, it's got that weird setup. And then, I mean, I know an Orange Crush powerbomb because I'm that much of a nerd. But beyond that, it's just one of those very indie type of silly contrived moves.
Yeah, Breeze is like, I don't do that PWG shit, man.
Exactly, man. I work in NXT.
Yeah, he's like, I'm too pretty to do this bullshit. but anyway, yes.
He might have gotten his bell rung. Like, he landed on his head a few times in this match.
Yeah, this next spot we're coming up. So right after this, like I was saying, I didn't know, like, obviously what the move was. It just seemed like a big move. And I know, you know, it could have... you know, some would argue that could kind of be a finisher. But anyway, so Tyler kind of bails out the ring after to try and, like, regroup himself. But Sammy hits a senton, and this is where Tyler just completely eats shit on the ramp and, like, slams the back of his head. And it looked like he legit hit his head. And, like, he was selling it. And I don't know if that's something they plan, like, you know, kind of because it does come into play in a minute. But he definitely, it looked good. If he was going for it, it damn sure looked real because it looked like he really knocked the shit out of his head. Then we start getting, the crowd is really getting into it at this point because we start getting the Ole chants and Sammy kind of does his version of hulking up, sort of. But then he goes to hit the, I'm assuming he was going for like the Huluva kick kind of thing in the corner.
Yeah.
But then he sort of misses it. And so Tyler Breeze is putting his hands over his head, presumably because his head is injured. Like Tim said, he's had a bunch of headshots throughout this, and then especially after just hitting his head on the ramp. And so when he goes to put his hands over his head, he kind of hits Sammy in the balls, kind of low blows him. But he can kind of argue, you know, like he wasn't really trying. He was just covering his head. And so based on that, while Sammy's reeling, he comes in, Breeze hits the beauty shot, and that picks up the win. And so Tyler Breeze will be our number one contender. So thoughts on this match? What do we think?
So I don't know. They were all getting their shit in. They were both getting their shit in. They're very smooth. You know, there wasn't very much awkwardness. They're really... I'm like in a weird spot with it because, number one, I don't know who I want to win. And I don't want Sammy to lose, though. So it always comes back to that for me in his matches. Like, as much as I like Tyler Breeze... Sammy's underdog thing has really got me, you know, hooked in to his character, and it actually colors how I look at his matches to that end, really, because I just found myself rooting for him way more than Tyler, but I thought that Tyler did a really great job in this match, and it showed his serious side, I thought. He didn't fuck around. He wasn't trying to be Prince Pretty or be cute. He didn't pose or anything. He was just legit trying to take Sammy out, and I really do think he hit his head on that steel grate on the outside. And to your point about the kickouts, even I was like, there might be maybe too many kickouts in this match. Not that I don't enjoy them, because I do. I just, you know, I'm trying to be objective about it. So I can see the point that there's too many and it might be indulgent to some. I do like the That Beauty shot.
I thought you said diabetes shot for a minute.
that diabetes shot.
The diabetes shot. Wow.
Like, I feel like it's been hit or miss for us sometimes, but and I was surprised by the win from Tyler, so I feel sad. You know, like, I enjoyed the match. I thought it was good. I enjoyed them, but I also am sad and disappointed at the same time, if that makes sense. I gave it 3 stars, Tim.
Okay. I'm a little bit mixed on it too. Like, I'm definitely in your boat, Jenny, where all the things you said, I'm thinking in my own head, I'm like, I'm on board with Tyler, but I love Sami Zayn. I'm like such a mark for him. Mm-hmm. And this is a match that feels like neither guy really should lose, but yeah, it still makes all the sense in the world to do it. Maybe if Tyler had been kept stronger going into this, I could see him taking the loss and it's all good. But I mean, he kind of needed this win as much as Sammy did. And you compare apples to apples, like, Sammy's character is that he's the baby face underdog. So I mean, an underdog loses more often than not, and if they're successful in pulling off that character and getting people invested in them, they can afford to eat those kind of losses. And I think that was the rationale here. I don't really disagree with it. I will say that at the same time, I don't think we need to put like an asterisk next to every Sami Zayn loss. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
he could have just lost more or less clean here and it's fine. Like, he can come back from that. That left a bad taste in my mouth. That finish where they acted like on commentary that it was controversial that Tyler like deliberately crotched Sammy or something going in for the Huluva kick. And I'm like, since when is it unsportsmanlike just to protect yourself? You know what I mean? Like, all he was doing was blocking the move, and too bad, so sad. You know what I mean? Like, that's a pretty accepted part of wrestling. It's not like he low blowed Sammy or anything. And I felt like that's what they were trying to say in order to save face on commentary. And I didn't like that at all. So, yeah, I'm a little bit mixed on the finish, and I thought that the match deserved sort of a better finish for what they had built to. In some respects, it's more realistic just kind of having that almost flash pin. Like, I can appreciate that to some extent, but I don't know that it really worked for what this match was going for, or at least it didn't work for me. At times it does feel like, you know, that old criticism of it's just a collection of cool moves, which I don't typically buy into, but in this case, I could see that. Kickouts didn't really bother me, but yeah, it did just kind of turn into an exchange of I'll hit you with my thing and then you'll hit me with yours, you know? So yeah, I was a little bit left wanting at the end of the day here, and just felt like these two had a better match in them. Maybe it was hurt by Tyler getting legit concussed. I mean, I don't know. It seemed like he was trying his best to work up to the level of Sammy, who's a very established, great worker. And for the most part, pulling it off. But I think he might have legit gotten hurt here. But all that said, I gave it a cool 3.5 stars still.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. I didn't hate it by any means. It just... And it's tough, too. You know, you judge a lot of these things by the standards of modern takeovers, right? And if this match or the equivalent of something like this happened today, I'm thinking like a good example of this sort of match today would be like a Johnny Gargano Finn Balor from TakeOver Portland, which, again, was just sort of... Well, it was just sort of a mid-card match thrown out there, right?
Mm.
But it like totally delivered. It was a killer match. And this just wasn't that, but sort of in the same vein.
Okay. Jake, did you think the low blow was accidental or purpose, or do you have an opinion on that?
I wasn't really sure, but I didn't mind the finish because the thing that made it work for me is at some point in the build, I know Bree said something like, the difference between me and Sami Zayn is that I'll do anything. I'll go, like, I'll do whatever I have to do to win and he won't, sort of thing. So right. To me, I didn't know if they were trying to, if that was the way of kind of doing that, by like, maybe he is doing it because he did say he's willing to do anything and that was his way of doing it and getting away with it. Because like, maybe he knew, like, that's one of Sami's signature spots, you know? I mean, maybe I'm giving them too much credit for thinking of this, but that's why it kind of worked for me. And so to me, it kind of showed, it kind of called back to that Tyler would do anything, even if it's something as subtle as, like, you know, hiding a low blow on that and, you know, hitting him in the head. I mean, like, hitting him in the nuts with his head.
Right. But, in the head with his head?
In the head, yeah. A lot of moving parts there.
Yeah, I think it's pretty, like, low-key, like, smart, you know? Like you said, that Breeze knows him well enough to know when to get that hand up and maybe, you know... Because they were, like we've said, they were pretty evenly matched. They were both bringing it pretty well to each other. So it's like, once you find a little opening, you might as well take it. You know, it might give you the advantage, and he just took advantage of it.
And I guess, like... And I think it's a credit to, like, even just the, I mean, it wasn't a ton of time, but those two video packages establishing it, like, it didn't feel like they were trying to get out of a finish. Like, it just seemed like the way it ended. And it wasn't necessarily because they didn't want Sammy to lose. Like, I didn't buy it that way. I mean, I did get, like, well, Sammy can say that, you know, maybe he's low blowed, even though he probably won't because it's not his personality. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like he just to take his lumps and go on. But I guess because they've made it, the way they presented it as, like, you know, two competitors and, like, kind of presented them more as real people and kind of went more of a real route with it, it kind of felt okay to me. And I definitely, with the kick out, I mean, the big moves and stuff, they kind of got into a little bit in the middle, but I didn't think it never reached that point to me where it took me out of the match too much. You know, like that power bomb, the orange juice power bomb.
Orange juice power bomb.
The Sunny D Delight. Sunny D Delight. The Sunny Delight special. That was the only one where I was like, maybe that should have ended it. But other than that, I thought it was okay. And I thought they sold when they did hit the big moves. They didn't right back up after too much. They sold it okay. And I think they did enough other stuff in the match to kind of, you know, it wasn't all they did. So it didn't, you know, hurt it too much for me. I mean, I'm in the same realm as y'all. I went 3.75 on it. The thing that saved it for me from being too much of, like, you know, just spot is I thought they did a good job of, like, making it feel like it was just two guys, like, going all out because they want to get this title shot. And, like, we really, like with Breeze, we've never seen him go at this level. And so it kind of made sense to me that he was, like, pulling out some crazy shit. Because, I think it's okay. It's a little bit more okay when you don't see it constantly. And so I thought it was okay in this case. I don't know. It never took me out of the match too much. I didn't think this was, like, a classic or anything. But I thought it was really good. And I think this is kind of I think it's kind of the breakout we were waiting for from Tyler Breeze to see him come in and have, like, a big match. And so that probably helped.
It is a good showing for him. You're right. Yeah.
I definitely think it elevated him for sure this match. Yeah. But he'll be our number one contender. But I think we're all kind of in the same realm, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
It's like a better Breeze match than it is a Zayn match, even though they're both at it somehow.
Yeah.
It's like it's a very weird takeaway that you have. Yeah.
Yeah. So after this, we get Lana coming out, which kind of surprised me that Lana is going to come out with Rusev. And Regal kind of had, I thought this was an interesting line about Rusev. And he said, I can't see anything going wrong with his career, which is interesting considering, you know, present things, you know,
what a thing to say.
And so they mentioned how Rusev has extended his power to Raw and SmackDown. And so I knew this was going to be coming. I never know if it would show up in NXT, but I definitely remember this from the time of them putting that ridiculous image of Vladimir Putin on the screen.
Yes.
Like, they're starting to work in where she goes, our great leader, Vladimir Putin. They just put this like random stock photo of Vladimir Putin. And he's just like, has this
Getty image of Vladimir Putin. Yeah.
And they just, like, keep it on the screen for, like, the rest of the promo.
Like he's watching.
It's so strange. Like, it's so weird. But luckily, our American hero, Mojo Rawley, was not going to take them coming out here and putting an image of Vladimir Putin on the screen. So he comes out waving the U.S. flag, and he says he's been hearing a lot of hype about Russia. I was thinking this is 2014. Just you wait, Mojo. Yeah. You're going to hear plenty of hype about Russia. Just wait and see. And he says, in the USA, we stay hype. And he's going to shove the flag right up Rusev's Putin. And maybe one of my favorite moments ever. He runs down, the American hero, Mojo Rawley, runs down the ramp, and you think he's like, all right, he's going to defend America, and he just gets his shit pushed to him. He just gets rocked. Like, he doesn't get like one single hit. Rusev just starts clubbing him, just destroys him, puts him in the accolade, kind of makes you think he's finished with him, rolls him out, and then follows him up the ramp and puts him in the accolade on the top of the ramp. And at that point, I'm thinking, like, the way they were shooting it was kind of like shot going up the ramp, and you could see the entrance. I'm like, okay, somebody's going to come and save him, and no one comes. They just leave Mojo. Like, nobody's no babyface comes.
Nobody's saving Mojo.
Just poor Mojo, like, just sits in the accolade and just gets destroyed. He just lets down America.
Severely. Gets
put in the accolade multiple times and passes out. I was not sure. It was kind of funny just to see that's how they decided to play it out. I thought it was kind of random to have Rusev show up on this show because he's really not in NXT. So I didn't really know what the point of this was, except maybe to have some kind of cool off from the last match. And I guess it was weird because I feel like they've been pushing Mojo a decent amount. And right here, he just looks stupid.
Yeah.
Like, he just runs to the ring and gets his ass beat. So I don't know. What did y'all think of this?
It's a real Hacksaw Jim Duggan vibe with Mojo.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like him, but this is nonsense, and it only makes sense as a little segment, like you said, to kind of cool down after the Sammy match. But, like, I think also the point of this is just to have Lana's fine ass in that suit. Just, wow, she looks amazing. And she can wear some heels. And but, yeah, she was real cute in this, too, like, sicking Rusev on Mojo like twice, just real nasty, and she kept just like laughing and smiling about it. So she was pretty great in this. What did you think, Tim?
I thought that this might lead to an impromptu match. I think I'm sort of grateful that it didn't, but I'm also trying to put myself in the mindset and in the shoes of someone who was just watching this for the first time in 2014. Imagine you'd never watched any like NXT weekly television. Maybe you watched Arrival. Maybe you caught wind of Takeover because you're a loyal WWE Network watcher, and this has been pushed extensively, and you're like, oh yeah, NXT, I like that last show. Let me watch this TakeOver, see what that's all about. And you're like, oh, okay, Rusev, I know who that is. Who's this guy? Oh, must be some big NXT star. Mm-hmm. And that's like all you really know about Mojo Rawley, like this patriotic sort of wrestler, like a Hacksaw Jim Duggan, as he said. Okay, this might lead to a decent little brawl here. And he just gets absolutely wrecked. And you're going, okay, I guess he's just like some loser jobber in NXT. Like, accurate. This is going to be your impression of Mojo after watching this. And to your point, Jenny, he's been kept sort of strong going into the show. It's not like he had a match, but it's almost like, man, who did Mojo piss off backstage to get this kind of treatment? You know, when I saw a lot
of... Shit, he might have volunteered for it.
Maybe.
You know, just get on the show at any cost, you know?
Because he just looks like a moron and a loser here.
Yeah.
Or
maybe Rusev just looks that badass.
Well, that could very well be. I mean, having said that, I was thinking as soon as Lana came out, I'm like in my head going, all right, I'm a little bit over seeing Lana and Rusev on these shows when they're not really a part of NXT anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, what are we doing, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're going to give me Mojo getting demolished here, I'm sort of back. It's
you're like, all right,
I'm back. And it's like I shouldn't really like it, but I do. So, yeah, I was into this.
It sent out a weird message, too. Like,
it does. It's the like wrong thing to do, but I like it.
It's like the main roster. It's like, hey, this guy made it to the main roster just to let you know. Now he's better than all these chumps in NXT. Yeah, like,
gonna absolutely annihilate these loser development.
A microaggression from Vince to Triple H.
That's probably what it was. Oh man, yeah, love it.
Send his guys down there to like shit all over your promotion.
Yeah, just so you know, it's
put him in the accolade twice.
Do it twice.
On the ramp, and that was another one of those shots. You know, they like kind of crouch low, so it looks awesome. It has a screen behind it to take over. It looks great, like it looked really cool.
Yeah, and I'm just waiting. Like, who's going to be the hero to save Mojo? Like, which face is going to come make his name by saving Mojo? Just no one.
Nobody.
Adam Rose is in the back drinking. Face on it. Well, here on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we have plenty of great shows that you can shove up your Putin. So the newest ride down the highway to the Impact Zone, which that's a podcast I'm on, Logan and the Gang, look at the 7th episode of Impact in weekly pay-per-view number 104, which has a really, really, probably the best TNA match I've seen thus far. So check it out. On the newest mega episode of NWA, I guess mega means very long, episode of NWA Crockett and Roll, Sean Callum and a Doctor are with Keith Hughes to recap great Crockett programming from June of 1985. On the newest episode of Wrestling Chicken Salad, Ben Locke and the guys head back in time to discuss the atrocity that is Fall Brawl 99. Tim, you're a WCW aficionado. Yeah. Would you agree that Fall Brawl 1999 is an atrocity?
Can confirm that was an atrocity. Great pick for that show. That's definitely in their wheelhouse on Chicken Salad. I marvel at what they could possibly do here. I need to check out the show because, my word, was it a train wreck.
All right, checks out. On the newest NWA Saturday special, Scott and Dr. G preview the debut episode of UWN Primetime Live, including the NWA World title match between Nick Aldis and Mike Bennett. On episode number 156 of the main event, Scott, Nate, and Steve discuss All Out, NXT, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and Elix Skipper. Yes, Elix Skipper, who actually we talk about a lot on the TNA pod. Yeah. His voice is a frequent topic of discussion.
What time he'll skip it?
Yeah, anytime he talks, you're just like,
yes, you know. That is so weird.
So take a listen and see why. Please rate review and subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Just search Place to Be Wrestling Network. Check out the Place to Be Nation pop feed with some great shows that include The Year in Pop, Laughing Theater, The Great Debate, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more. Check those out. Me and Tim were recently on a new podcast coming to the pop feed where we yeah, I think we can say it.
I was going to say, why don't we just, yeah, I
was wondering where you were going.
Yeah, we should just go ahead and throw it out there. Like, it's not really ours to share, but it's going to debut soon enough. What is it, Jake?
It is the Making Mount Rushmore, where various topics for each episode where you basically make the Mount Rushmore of whatever the said topic is. So the first episode Tim and I were on was the Mount Rushmore of HBO dramas and the Mount Rushmore of HBO comedy. So that was a lot
comedies
of fun.
And dramas. So two Mount Rushmores in our debut episode.
Yeah. So be sure to check that out. Should be fun. It'll have various, not really a set crew, I don't think, on that one. Just kind of a rotating cast of characters on that one. Yes. And be sure to check out our own Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position, home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop. You guys want to throw some Talking Pop plug in here real quick?
Yeah, we our latest episode was an interview with our friend, the Cowboy. And it was interesting. We got to talk about Insane Clown Posse and farts and, I mean, all kinds of great stuff.
Talked about alcohol. And
not in the way we usually talk about alcohol.
No, you're right. And social media.
Right.
Yeah, it's a first timer on Talking Pop, but we all had a really good time and looking forward to got a lot of great feedback. So if you haven't checked that out yet and you do enjoy Talking Pop, you should look forward to that one.
Yeah, I can confirm. It's very good. Roger is a wonderful human being, for sure.
Yes, he is.
Freak Out Driving.
Top five human being, yes.
He's the
just under Dave Bautista, probably.
He's on the Mount Rushmore of human beings ever in existence. Freak Out Driving, Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, The Journey Through Infinity. And more. Also, check out the North South Connection feed brought to you by JT or Zero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. And me, Jennifer, and myself are also on there in various forms. It's the official home for the Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, the Extreme Three Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, the Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast, TNA Never Dies, Shrink Wrapped, and more. And we have also officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have till New Year's Eve, which is fast approaching, to do research, promote matches, and build your lists. Conversation rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCW matches or the Pro Wrestling Only message board. And on social media, I think it's back up now. I think Andy got that fixed. The greatest song for a movie tournament has kicked off, so be sure to vote for your favorites. Check out placetobenation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes, bringing articles on topics in the world of wrestling, sports, pop culture. Trent SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. If you're doing online shopping for Amazon, be sure to click the banner on the right side of Place to Be Nation homepage or use placetobenation.com/Amazon. Takes you right to the Amazon, helps PTBN with no cost to you. While you're at it, pick up a copy of longtime listener Adrian Cotton's second book, AWO Big Time Players, Episode 2, Continuing to Grow. It's a vivid description of the second episode of the Alpha Wrestling Organization's program. Big Time Players is available for as an ebook and a paperback. You can get both episodes 1 and 2 in paperback for $15.98. So check all of that out right now.
Great.
Turn this off. Hypothetical listener. Hypothetical listener.
Imagine just listening to the live read and then like, that sounds great, and then just never coming back to the show.
Hey, they're out there.
That probably happens a lot.
Telling you.
Like, why am I listening to this shit?
Hope this one goes better than the last one. They always do, though.
They do. They can't help it.
A takeover. 3.5 hours. What in the hell? How does this happen?
Ruining the industry one episode at a time.
Yep.
All right.
So next up, another big match. This is our women's title tournament final with Charlotte versus Natty. So this another one, we get a big pre-match video package with sit-down interviews with both. And so this one, they're kind of both together. They go back and forth between Natty and Charlotte with a lot of focus on their families. Like they're not focused on the family, the not that, but the video now, packages.
Wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. We stepped over something very important going into this.
Yes.
We got a crowd shot, and we got...
how can I forget?
We got a very important person, a VIP here in the crowd, who was called out and seen and referred to on camera. Do you remember who this was?
Tim, can you tell me who it was? Well, it's a big star, so I'm assuming this is Tom Cruise.
Not Tom Cruise, but as big as Tom Cruise. Equally, yeah. Star of the Blade trilogy. Chris Christopherson.
Oh, that's Whistler weird.
From Blade, who dies in the first Blade, comes back in the second Blade, dies in the third Blade. There's not a fourth Blade, but perhaps he would come back again. But this is important because I would assume Chris Christopherson was here in the crowd here at Full Sail in NXT TakeOver to cheer on his own son, Jody, otherwise known as Captain Comic, the great competitor in Rosebud, known as Captain Comic.
Which did we know that?
I think we talked about
that. Oh, yeah, God. We covered it.
All right, I'm going to fall asleep. Okay.
Well, it's very memorable, so I don't know how you could...
Yeah, it was so memorable that I remembered it before this, but apparently when I was doing my notes, I couldn't remember what he was called. I called him Comic Boy.
I called him Comic Con.
So...
It literally just...
Between the three of us, we got it worked out.
Just came together. I died laughing as soon as they showed him. I absolutely lost it. I don't know about. I just all of a sudden it's like, oh, this all just makes sense now in a way.
Because you have to imagine, like, literally no one watching probably knows that he has any connection to any wrestler in NXT. They just think like Chris Christopherson decided to come to this.
Yeah.
Not even like the main roster WWE show. He's at like the developmental territories, like pay-per-view, like Chris Christopherson.
Cause just like imagine, just imagine had we not seen that great match between Captain Comic and Camacho and went on this little diversion and learned this wonderful trivia here. Had we not known that going in, we would have seen Chris Christopherson in the crowd, maybe made a joke about it and been like, oh, of all the random celebrities. But it's not random at all, is it? It's just
makes perfect sense.
It's just wonderful.
Good booking.
Yeah. Kudos to us.
Yeah.
For our wonderful coverage here.
Did the research. All right. So back to the big women's title video package. So like I said, it kind of goes back and forth with Natty. And so they use her kind of family connection of Brett. They kind of mention the Hearts overall, but really she's all about her uncle Brett, who's going to accompany her to the ring. And then Charlotte obviously has her father, Ric Flair. And so they kind of go back and forth. They get comments from both Ric and Brett, and they kind of try and use like their relationship or like the previous feuds between Brett and Ric, even though I don't know if they really had the most, they did obviously wrestle and stuff, but it's not like they have this, I mean, to my knowledge, like some historic all-time feud, but I see what they were doing. And so they kind of put that as you know, kind of phrases like that, and almost like that they're fighting for their families. And just like the other ones, I thought this one was good. With like the sit down interviews, like Charlotte saying she's genetically superior, and that, like, I like the way they spoke kind of naturally. It wasn't really like they were cutting mm-hmm. promos or anything. They just mm-hmm. kind of spoke like Tim said, as actual human beings. And like, Charlotte, I love the line she used at the end that the Flares are going to need their own like wing of the Hall of Fame. So
that was
I enjoyed
amazing.
This as a hype package.
Me too. Like, and it's so funny because like it seemingly comes out of nowhere, really. Mm-hmm. Because what we've seen of Charlotte promo wise, or you know, even talking wise, it's just been like her BFF gimmick and like just being catty and like, you know, just like crazy one liners and not any depth whatsoever. So then for her to come out in this video package just kind of took me aback a little bit.
Well, you know, it's very rich that the Flair family thinks that they deserve a wing in the WWE Hall of Fame when my unlovable brother Bruce has been lobbying for that for the Hart family for years. All of the brothers and sisters going into the Hall of Fame. The storied, legendary rivalry of the Harts versus the Flairs over the years. I beat Ric Flair every time. I beat him in Saskatchewan. I beat him at the sold out in 1998. I can't remember any other times we wrestled, but I always won.
Does Rick have a rebuttal to Brett on this matter?
Our matches together, but I don't think he won. I lost some of our matches, but it doesn't really matter because I was always kept strong in WCW. Anyway,
amazing.
I thought this video package, it sort of made the finals or the tournament itself of the women's championship tournament look more impressive than it mm-hmm. really was. Like,
yep.
We talked about how that was a little bit lackluster, right? Mm-hmm. Over those few weeks of television that we covered it. And it's weird. Like, I'm a little bit mixed here because I find it, while I like the individual sit down interviews, I find it difficult to get behind either of these two as wrestling characters because mm-hmm. Charlotte has the better backstory for sure here in the way that she comes off and is presented and just represents herself. It like all makes sense and comes together very well. But then like that whole genetically superior line just sounds sort of gross and it's just heelish, right? It seems like it's putting her over as the heel. And you've got Natalya playing it straight as the babyface, except no one really wants to cheer Natalya. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, who do we really?
They want to cheer Brett, though, so that's all that really matters.
Yeah. Oh, my great fans and fools. Yeah, so they kind of want to cheer. I guess she can leech off of his heat a little bit, but yes. I don't know. It's just sort of like, you go into this and you're thinking, okay, Charlotte, Natty, I guess it'll be a decent match, hopefully, but I kind of don't care entirely who wins.
Again,
2014 mindset here.
Right.
Poor Anvil, huh? Like, you would think he was like, you know, I died by this point, but he hadn't.
I'm here so to represent my daughter, Natalya.
You know, like, that she's out with her Uncle Brett, like, because, you know, Anvil.
Well, what's she going to do? Come out with the ghost of her dad?
You know? Well, that's what I'm saying. He's still alive. So it's like, he didn't die until 2018.
He's still alive? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anvil Neidhart died in 1995, and I adopted Natalya after that. That's my daughter now. That's why
like
I'm
a
in
grown
her.
Woman.
Well, maybe he
She's
was
like 34.
Or maybe he was in bad shape or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh,
maybe
he was still alive.
Bigger draw, you know.
So. Look, it must have been pretty rough because I just watched a 2002 Raw where they had Stu and he was looking pretty rough, and they still. Like, he didn't look like he had any idea what was going on. They still got him out there. So, but anyway, so before we have this match, so I'm interested to hear Tim's views on this because I wonder if it's going to anger him. So Paige, the Divas champion on the main roster, comes out to the ring to cut a promo. Looking pretty hey-shmesh, I would say. She thanks the fans. And I thought this was fine for what it was. Now, I know, so we have Paige, who could not defend the NXT title, but she is still here. She could not have time to defend the title on this show, but she still was able to come and cut a promo and be here in the building.
What are you doing? You're trying to wind me up.
That's it. I'm just saying. I don't know. I thought
this might be something. That's hilarious. Yeah.
Oh, I thought about
that. Overall, my thing with this was, like, I kind of get where they're doing it, you know, come let her, you know, put them over before the match or everything, but it just dragged on a little bit too long. And at this point, we just got out of the Rusev thing, which was kind of long too, or just like, and it's not like this is some super long show. It's like 2 hours. So by this point, we have that, and then we have Paige out here talking, kind of cutting a long promo. So it kind of started to feel like a little bit of a lull in the show in, like, not a good way. Kind of hurt the pace a little bit, but it was okay. It's just her promo kind of went on a little bit too long for me. Thoughts on the Paige promo?
All right. Can I just say that I'm not gonna go on a whole spiel, but Paige getting stripped of the NXT Women's Championship has become my version of you, Jake, shitting on Bubba Ray Dudley in 2002. Ruthless Aggression podcast. It just keeps coming back to trigger me because it's like, it just feels like we've seen so much of Paige since they took the title off of her. Right. And it just seems like, well, like if we're going to keep seeing her, wouldn't it be better served to, I don't know, have her drop the title in one of these appearances. Mm-hmm. It's like, she's on the main roster now. You're going to fly her here back into fucking NXT Full Sail. I'm sure she had much better things to do this weekend or in the middle of this week, whenever this fucking show was, than to come out here and deliver like the most boring cookie cutter, aw shucks, former champion promo ever. Like, this was a horrible fucking promo. And this was, like, the best thing you could think to. Why even bother having her here?
And she just looked like she hated it and didn't want to be there.
Couldn't blame her, you know? Just, if you're going to have her here, have her work a fucking match. Mm-hmm. As I've said numerous times, I can't get over this whole, anyway. I've said enough. More than enough on those.
Yeah, I get where you're coming. It kind of felt like when Shawn, like Shawn Michaels, does those kind of long rambly promos and he kind of gets in this mode. That's kind of what it reminded me of, like giggly, weird Shawn Michaels.
Especially when he forfeits a title.
Yeah.
I mean, it already happened, but it's sort of the same idea. Like, what am I doing?
So we get the entrances. Like I said, Rick comes out with Charlotte. And Brett comes out with Natty. I was very happy that Brett is not wearing the jorts anymore, like the big giant biker jorts. Because him, like at this age, wearing that just for some reason depresses me. I don't know. It is something
very
about
depressing.
It.
Yes.
So I'm glad he's just like him in the I think he calls them his skater shorts. I think
Oh my god.
I think that's what he calls it normally. I don't know if that's like a look, but I was glad he was just kind of had his, you know, a button-down
like
shirt.
An adult.
Yes. All right. So this match, we start off
Can I just say that Ric Flair walking out to Charlotte's music, which I think this is the first time we've heard that music.
Yep.
Of Charlotte's. Because she had her theme, her weekly NXT kind of
generic.
Yeah, crappy theme, but this is like the Charlotte music now, which I'm pretty sure is debuting on this show. Ric Flair walking out with her to that music is inherently funny. It just is. When he gets that little spring in his step and that little Ric Flair swagger, like, I don't know, something about it. Because you're so used to just hearing Ric Flair and Ric Flair's theme, mm-hmm. right? And this is like the jazzed up version of his he's coming out like he's kind of into it.
The,
you know?
The millennial version.
Yeah. I don't know. That popped me.
Yeah, Rick's pretty fun through this whole situation. So we get some like mat work to start, which is kind of really where this match really took place. It was a lot of mat work. So like in the early part, Charlotte is like really fighting from underneath a lot in the early going, which is interesting. Like you guys mentioned, the heel face dynamic is kind of weird in here because Charlotte has clearly been positioned as the heel leading up to this. But even that promo before, she does say some heel stuff, but then she has the Rick connection, which just kind of gives her sympathy, and it's kind of a weird deal with the, you know, the heel face dynamic. But they do like they work in a spot where Charlotte does like a leg whip on the outside, which hurts Natty's knee, which sort of becomes a running thing throughout the match. We get Charlotte going for the big moonsault, but she misses, which as opposed, this match definitely had a different feel than the last than the Sammy Breeze match for sure, because like the moonsault was one of the few like big, you know, quote unquote big moves they pulled out, and she missed it. And so then she gets her, she gets Natty into the figure four, and I really loved whenever Charlotte has her in the figure four that Natty's trying to slap her and Charlotte's just dodging it. I love that. That was an awesome detail. And so they just kind of rolling around the figure four for a pretty decent amount of time, and they like end up rolling out of the ring. Then she ends up kicking Natty into the steps, which I thought was good. Then they go back to the, Charlotte then goes actually for the sharpshooter, kind of like in a cocky move, but they played it off well. Like Natty counters it because the idea is like, she knows that move better than anybody. Until finally Charlotte kind of sneaks out of nowhere and hits the natural selection and then wins it. I, really love this match a lot. This one like surprised me. I didn't really know because I know Charlotte's still early on. Obviously, she's really talented and will become really, really good. And, like, I don't can't think of any Natalya matches off the top of my head that I would consider, you know, very good to great. But I just love the way they got over, like, the struggle of the match. Like, there wasn't a ton of big moves. They were just constantly, like, fighting for momentum and jockeying for position. And they did a really good job of, like, selling that. And just all those little details, like I said, with her, like, dodging it while she's trying to slap her and just constantly, like, rolling around in the holds and stuff trying to – which made sense. And they kind of calls back to, you know, the family connection where, you know, each one of them coming where the submission is, like, famous in the family and stuff. So I was hoping for a little bit hotter of a finish because it kind of came a little bit out of nowhere considering what the match was. But I guess it did make sense that after all those holds and struggling, you needed to come out with something like that wasn't going to win it. You needed to come up with some quick thing to finish it and just kind of go for the knockout. And it just felt a lot different than a lot of matches I feel like you would see. Like I said, it felt way like completely opposite in a good way of the Sammy Breeze match. And like I said, I like that Charlotte had to move away from the submission to win. I don't know. It the way they worked it, I think, made the match feel big and like it mattered that they were struggling so much. Yeah, I loved it. I went 4 stars on this one. I thought this was awesome.
Like this came out of nowhere for me. Like, I don't think anything that we've seen thus far would have prepared us that these ladies had this match in them. And the story with their families is really great and like gets you involved in it, but that's where it ends. Brett doesn't get involved. Rick doesn't fuck anybody up. The boys stay put and let the girls wrestle. And they just straight went to the mat for most of the match and just twisted each other up and really hit each other really hard. In the beginning, Natty is like laughing a lot and she genuinely looks like she's having fun, fucking up Charlotte during the beginning part. And then when Charlotte gets mad and starts bringing it back to her, Natty goes in the, you know, she just, I think she was like, oh, okay, I'm not having fun anymore. but her facials are real. Like, I thought Natalya was excellent in this match. And it's like, she's like, You could kind of see her calling spots a little bit. It looked like she tapped to me at one point. Like she was their communication was a bit sloppy. That's pretty much the only way I'll ding it, because you could kind of see them leading each other into things, some like helping each other.
Yes.
Into a couple of different moves, but I didn't mind it. Like I kind of actually liked it. I really liked the near falls during all the like grappling and all the submission stuff looked really good. I liked the commentary for this too. I thought that they really did a really good job at kind of elevating Charlotte a little bit and like showcasing this moment for her and how big of a deal it was for her. I was blown away. Like I super really, really loved this match. And this is hopefully to me, like maybe the beginning of like what I know and love about Charlotte. And so I gave it 4.25 stars.
Wow. Nice. Okay. So Charlotte is amazing to me, just in the sense that she has a gymnastics background, right? Mm-hmm. You would sort of expect her to be more of a high flyer, and she's not really. I mean, she does that moonsault, and it looks beautiful, of course, but that's really the extent of her sort of aerial offense. She's a very mat-based and will become more of a power-based wrestler. Mm-hmm. And that's just so interesting to me that she picked up kind of the fundamentals in a way that almost flies in the face of her own sort of athletic background, which I just think is tremendous. And I enjoyed how much this was like a mat-based sort of match, telling that story of Natalya being the kind of craftier, more savvy in-ring technician, but Charlotte having an answer for all of it. Like she sort of, she'll get caught, but just power out of a lot of these holds that Natalya is slapping on her. And that sort of, in a way, I feel like almost predicts Charlotte's evolution again as more of this power type of worker. Charlotte's selling is fucking tremendous in this match. I thought just the facial expressions, like that exchange on the figure four where they're both kind of grappling for the advantage, was outstanding. I mean, the best work we've seen from her to date. And complimented so much by Rick and Brett on the outside, but sort of knowing their roles and not making the match about them. Also just really great. And I really enjoyed that that flash pin that Charlotte gets off of the natural selection, which is a move that I feel like we don't see enough of. That's a really cool looking, just kind of snap finish sort of move. And probably the right call here after they'd already done like an extended submission type of exchange. It's just not what you're expecting, not what you're set up for, and just kind of blows away your expectations in the best way. Something else I pointed out here, when Charlotte does that, they call it a figure four headlock.
Headlock,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the way that she's like bouncing Natty around the ring, it's almost humiliating in a way.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, she's pounding her head into the mat. She's doing somersaults, all this shit. And that's something else I kind of wish she still did. And I like forgot that she used to do early on. And I'm like, oh yeah, that move. That was a pretty cool move. And so that just brought a smile to my face. All in all, I really enjoyed this. I think it's a very like under the radar sort of match in that it was appreciated at the time, but has kind of been forgotten. You look back on it now and you think, yeah, that's a really good NXT Women's Championship match, but it probably doesn't get the credit that it really deserves for being up to this point. I'm trying to think again, in May 2014 here, what was a better WWF women's match? You know what I mean? Going into this. I mean, there was some good, you know, Trish Mickey stuff, like some good Victoria Trish stuff. Before that, I'm like,
yeah. And if you want to go all the, I mean, it's not singles, but if you want to go back to like the Jumping Bomb Angel
the
stuff,
the Jumping Bomb, yeah, the Survivor Series stuff. Okay, I'll put a caveat on it and say singles women's match. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like it's absolutely in the conversation, if not the best up to that point. So historical significance, I feel like has gotten a little bit lost to time. And originally I wanted to give this a cowardly 3.75, but you talked me up to 4 stars here.
Yay.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
And you can't, mm-hmm. like leave out the ending as well. Like very emotional, with Rick. And I mean, everybody's sobbing in the ring, and even me, I was crying by the time it was over with, because Rick like holds up her hand and is like just dying, sobbing. So
it's swinging the jacket around.
Yeah,
yeah, it's amazing. Such a roller coaster.
He just goes off.
Yeah. It was awesome. And to your point, like Tim, you're talking about like, where does this rank? And I feel like the perception is until like Sasha and, you know, and Becky and all kind of get rolling, that's when it kind of picked up. But I mean, if you think about it, at Arrival, we had the Paige match, which I don't think was, you know, Paige at Emma, which I don't think was on the level of this, but that one was pretty damn good too.
Yeah, it was pretty damn good. I like that.
You know what I mean? So they're already like right out of the gate. I mean, on these first two big T shows, both the women's matches are good. To in this case, great, I would say. And like you said, they made the whole thing. It wasn't just like a good match. It felt like it mattered. Like Brett and Rick being on the outside, like it felt like it meant something. They're fighting for the title. So even if the build wasn't that good, just with the video packages and just the way they worked the match, they just immediately just sucked you in that quickly, which I thought was really awesome.
I will say that it feels a little bit disconnected from Charlotte's booking going into this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, it seems like they're resetting her character to some extent. And I mean, that's just wrestling, you know, sometimes a heel turns face. It's not necessarily like foreshadowed all that well, or, you know, face turns heel. These are just things that are an accepted part of wrestling. So you got to figure a lot of people are watching this without, again, having seen the weekly TV. So this is what you want to present them with.
I know we've talked a long time about this match, but I do want to say that, because like what I've seen of like Bayley and Sasha, for example, so far, I know that they have really good matches coming in the future, but like, I'd had some trouble, like, kind of believing that, because I'm like, I'm just like, I don't know, fair. Like, they're not that impressive. But then Charlotte turns around and does this. I'm like, well, fuck, maybe they do turn it around later. Yeah. So, looking forward to that.
You're like, oh, my goodness, they got me, like, emotionally invested in this. This is insane. Like,
I'm trying to think if this is the first. This might have been the first I really saw of Charlotte, like, because I wasn't watching the weekly shows religiously or anything. So,
what an introduction! Damn.
Yeah, I don't know if this was the first match I saw with her, but I mean, all I know is I've always been like, she made a very good first impression on me, and this is like the only Charlotte that I've ever known, really. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm glad to see that she has like arrived, basically. And both of them showed up for this match. I mean, Natalia's always been a solid hand, but they both really showed up for this match, and again gave it that big match feel.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say, because like Jenny said, we've been talking about, but it's deserving. This match, I think, is deserving of him. Is that this so easily, like, this style of match is so hard to pull off. It could easily have turned into being a complete boring, like, rolling around the mat, but it's to their credit that they sold it and got it over. I mean, it's a very difficult thing to do to get this kind of match to work, you know, especially when you think of, like, Charlotte is very early in her career. To get over, like, a mat-based match, it could have easily turned into, you know, them rolling around a figure four, just kind of doing nothing, and it could have easily got boring and sucky, but it went completely opposite direction. So
relies so much on escalation and keeping you like on the hook throughout the entirety of the match, and one botch could have really just destroyed all that. And it's so clean and well worked.
Right. So coming off the heels of that, we have our main event, which is Neville. Adrian Neville, as he is still here, versus Tyson Kidd for the for the NXT title. And so we get another kind of same style video package with these two. They mainly focused on Neville in this one. I found like Neville basically saying that, you know, Tyson Kidd's trying to come back to NXT to make a name for himself, but I've built NXT, I have all these different competitors, kind of what we've seen of Neville so far. But we've been pretty high on him and how he's developed his character since he's become champion. And I thought this kind of just continued that. Tyson, he was all right for me. It's hard for me to get into him. He seems, some about him seems very forced to me. I don't know, like unnatural, and it's hard for me to get into him too much.
So. He seems like a douchebag to me. Big douche energy.
Far too attractive to be an actual Hart family member. So
you know, it's funny.
By association.
I had this show on, and my non-wrestling friend was here, and she goes, "Oh, he's cute talking about Tyson." And I was just like, "Really?"
Mesh. That square head. It's got to go on.
How dare you?
I'd rather have Neville's ears any day.
What? Oh, my God.
Clearly, right. only me and your friend have taste, Jenny.
Obviously.
Was it Bianca?
It was
Bianca's first.
I wouldn't say square head like a bad thing. It's just, to me, that's just like it's like a type of, you know, like, I'm not saying like that's bad, but
it's just the head shape.
Yeah, it's like, you
so
know,
square
people. Square, like,
I would give some, okay.
Yeah, like very angular. Like, you know, very, lot of, square? Very, like, what do you call that? Like, strong jaw.
Parallelogram.
parallelogram shaped Tyson Kidd. Like a borrowed fall.
The big douche parallelogram.
The big douche parallelogram Tyson Kidd.
All right, so we start with your typical wrist locks and kind of fighting for leverage, and then they kind of end up staring each other down as they do. Tyson slowly works his way on top, and then Neville starts working in his comeback with some nice kicks, and he hit a pretty sick looking like drop kick in the corner that was real good. And then they had a weird spot where it almost looked like where like Kidd was like waiting to hit the blockbuster because that's sort of his move. I thought that was weird. They hit a Russian leg sweep off the middle rope, and they kind of go out. Then they hit a suplex. They both go out again. And then Tyson locks in what is apparently, Regal says, it's called the dungeon lock, which is kind of like a like an arm bar head scissor looking deal. And but Neville gets his way out of that. Then we get a weird sequence, I thought, where like Tyson Kidd goes up to the top, and he was sort of waiting up there for a really long time, again, almost like he's just sort of waiting for Neville to go up there. And then finally Neville does make his way up there, and kind of he hits a Rana, and then finally hits his good old tried and true, the Red Arrow. And so this, to me, this was my disappointing match of the night. Like, it was good, but it just never got... Like I said, there were some weird spots, especially like in that finish. I could just see, and the way they shot it too didn't do any favors, because I felt like they caught, like, I think you could even see Tyson Kidd at one point kind of trying to wave Neville over when he's on the top rope, like tell him to get in this spot, which was kind of weird, especially in the finish. That's not great. And it just felt like it felt more like a good TV main event than some of the other big matches we've seen on here. Like, every move looked kind of good, but they never really built any momentum. The crowd really didn't seem to be getting into it, especially considering it's the main event. It's a title match, and it just never seemed to connect. It didn't have the intensity of either the women's match for sure or the number one contender match. I don't know. It just didn't hit for me. So I went 3 stars on it because it was executed fine enough. It was good, but it just never... It just felt like it never got out of first gear for me.
That sounds about right to me, too. I think the finish hurts it a lot. Because it was not only abrupt, but it was so sort of telegraphed by that setup with the... Don't get me wrong, the top rope Rana looked pretty sick. But, like, the way that Tyson kind of waved it off the first time, like, Neville goes to the well again, it's just sort of like, all right, clearly they're going for something here, but it's just taking forever to set up, and I don't know that it's really going to be worth all of this, or is even what they intended. So, I mean, they don't blow it or anything, it's just like, the word perfunctory comes to mind in describing this match. It's not bad by any means, but it does leave you wanting. And on commentary, like, they're trying to get over the story here, which, I mean, basically it's Tyson Kidd made a big splash in NXT and in very short order became the number one contender. I think that's basically all we need to know, but they're like, talking about all this, their mirror images of each other. Oh, their career paths are so paralleled. I'm like, no, they haven't. Like, they're not really similar at all. Like Tyson, yeah, he has a couple flashy moves, but it's not like he's pulling out the red arrow or anything. They're not. Like,
they're both really good shape. That's
extremely good shape. Yeah, they're very agile wrestlers with similar physiques. If you're being charitable, you could say that was just so forced, that line they were trying to push. So that put a bad taste in my mouth. I don't know. I guess it's a solid championship defense for Neville. Red Arrow always looks good, like I said, but I was a little bit kinder than you, Jake. I gave it 3.25, but I mean, it felt like they had a better match in them.
I'm right there with you guys. it's like wrestling yourself, says Regal. I'm like, I love you, but no. I mean, they were trying just way too hard to... I think nobody expected the women's match. So it's kind of like, this is probably suffering maybe a tad from that. But yeah, like, the pacing was off. I just feel like they couldn't get in sync with each other. not much chemistry at all. Like you said, perfunctory, like, everything they are saying is like, are doing is looks good and they're professional, and but there's just no real magic in the match at all. So I think I gave it, you know, a fairly generous 3.25 stars.
And I sometimes think it's just a lack of chemistry, you know.
It is,
and I think it looks worse when the other two matches that were kind of built and maybe a similar level, like upper card matches, kind of delivered in what this one was lacking. Like, the women's match especially, like, really, like, delivered as far as, like, building the emotion of it and making it feel important and kind of having that intensity. So it's kind of like, right after you, like you said, Jenny, right after watching that, this kind of feels real flat. Like, if you would have told me that, like, I was going to like the Brodus Clay Neville match a little bit more than this, I mean, that's kind of, you know, because...
Yeah, you're right.
But at least that had, like, a story to it, like, that they were going for. This kind of just felt like you said, Tim, like, paint by numbers.
And I don't really ding either one of them. Like you said, solid title defense, I think, for Neville. But it doesn't give us anything new on Neville. It just sort of reinforces what we've already kind of liked about him. So we're going to need, I think, some sort of intensity, some sort of escalation, or a good feud or something for him going forward. I don't really want to see him wrestle Tyson Kidd anymore.
Well, I don't know if you'll be lucky, because we do get kind of a post-match sort of something that at least suggests that it might continue, because they kind of work that Tyson Kidd as being sort of a sore loser, like which we didn't mention with the women's match. So the women's match did end with them sort of hugging and showing a sign of respect sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so this one, they almost, I guess, tease like that might be the same thing that happens here, but Kidd kind of just walks off and sort of pushes Neville away and kind of walks off a little bit of a, on commentary, they kind of play it up like he's being a sore loser, which I don't know where they're going. I don't remember, but usually I feel like when they do.
Me neither.
But usually when they play this off, it's to, you know, it'd be weird to even, yeah, it'd be weird to put that much effort, like that much emphasis on him being a sore loser and then do absolutely nothing with it. And they kind of seem to, on NXT, kind of at least plan things out a little bit in advance. So it certainly seems like their feud may continue. So they have a better match. Who knows?
Maybe.
I like it in theory, but to Jenny's point, I like don't really need to see them wrestle again. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Tyson Kidd doesn't give me the collie wobbles. I don't know. He doesn't get me excited. He doesn't do much for me. I don't know why.
As a wrestler, though, but anyway, yeah, it's just sort of, they didn't do anything wrong, but sometimes, as you said, the magic isn't always there.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that wraps up the very first NXT TakeOver. Overall thoughts, I'll let you guys go first, and then I'll give my thoughts. Like, overall thoughts on the show and rating.
Overall and rating. So, it's... I think that it kind of delivered, like you talked about, what were our expectations. It was mixed. So, I feel like, in the end, I have mixed feelings about the show. It hit some highs that I did not expect and completely thrilled about. But then, you know, a disappointing main event, and then Sammy losing is kind of sad. I didn't like Adam Rose, and El Locale kind of fucked up that tag match. So, I'm going to give it 6.5 overall out of 10.
All right, yeah, I'm in the same lane as you, Jenny, with it's tough, right? Because you think of TakeOver as the brand that it is now, and just kind of the standard of quality that it represents now, you're like looking at your baseline match on a given TakeOver through 2020 eyes as being like a 3-star, like,
yeah.
Like, you get a 3-star TakeOver match today, and you're like, well, that was sort of disappointing, you know, and then you have to sort of shake yourself of that mindset, because NXT 2014 is not what NXT 2020 was, and it has different goals, it's trying to achieve different things, but having said that, I'm not going to look at something like Camacho versus Adam Rose and say, well, that was a big disappointment, like, it's a 2-star match, you know what I mean? But then you look at Tyler Breeze, Sami Zayn, you look at that main event, you look at the tag title match, and you're like, they could have done more here. And I feel like they didn't really capitalize when they could have. And it's, like I said, tough to be objective about it, but I think based on the build and based on what we have seen in our project going into this, like, we had pretty high expectations, I thought. And the obvious comparison to something we have seen thus far is probably Arrival, you know? And I look at Arrival up and down that card and sort of what our match ratings were, and they had like a real blowaway match in Sammy versus Cesaro, and a couple of like upper 3-star type matches. Mm-hmm. And I think that this show lacks that true blowaway match. You know, Charlotte Natalya is, I think, very good and has this historical significance, but I wouldn't call it like a blowaway match. You know what I mean? And everything else is sort of like, doesn't get much out of that 3-star territory. So in a way, it looks like kind of a disappointment. It's certainly an easy watch, but I don't know. I was thinking I'd get more out of this than I did. So I'm going to give it a 6.5. Is that what you gave it, Jenny?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there.
I was like, oh my God, is he going to say like 4?
No.
Yeah, I was going to have to like really adjust.
No, that sounds just right for me.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm in the same ballpark. I think I'm a tad bit higher just because I do think the last stretch kind of delivered the last 3 matches, even if the main event, I thought was a little disappointing. The women's match was really awesome. And Sammy Breeze, I think I enjoyed a good deal, maybe a little bit more than y'all did. I did think that that weird stretch with the Rusev thing followed by the Paige promo was like a weird lag that kind of dragged the show down a little bit, especially when you're not. Yeah, especially when I feel like you don't really have that much time to kill. The show is only 2 hours and you're only getting like 5 matches or something. We could have easily got something else on there. So that was kind of weird. I didn't mind the opening stuff because it wasn't that long. It was what it was. And I think I'd give this a little bit of bonus points because for me, another thing, it's not only did it have some good matches, but I think they elevated some people that needed to be elevated, like Charlotte for sure. I mean, this was like complete Charlotte coming out party. And then I think Breeze comes out a little good, like, you know, looking a lot better after this, which I think matters in a show like this, that they did accomplish that. So I think I give them a little bit of bonus points. So I went 7 out of 10, which just is a hair higher than y'all. But I almost thought it over-delivered. And maybe I was a little down on it going into the card. I guess the Tyson Kidd-Neville match almost was what I thought it was going to be, because I kind of was – I guess in my head I was like, well, maybe Neville will, like, really push it. But, yeah I think – I still think it was a pretty good show. I mean, 7 out of 10, 6.5, 7 is not, you know, it's pretty, yeah. Well, still pretty good.
We've also talked about how sometimes you're on kind of a different grading scale when you're talking TV versus TakeOver. Sure. And I think 6.5 sounds kind of damning if you're talking about a TV show. But for a TakeOver, it's like, think of, benefit of hindsight, but we're going to get to some, God willing, some 10 out of 10, some 10 out of 10 takeover. I'm just going to say
10 out of 10. Fuck yeah.
I'm just going to say it. So, you know, this compared to some of that stuff that we know is coming is like, I don't know. It's just a different threshold.
Oh, yeah. I agree. So let's get into our awards. Best match. This was an easy one for me and really was a surprise. So women's title match for sure.
Yeah. Easy.
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like our most hidden gem, I guess.
Oh if my you God. Wheel no
match
doubt.
That we found so far, like just came out of nowhere. And
yeah.
Worst match for me was the tag match with our buddy El Locale.
I'm with the Rose on that one.
I guess I'll go the tag match going by my star ratings.
Rising, it was my two people I just spoke about having kind of breakout performances, Tyler Breeze and Charlotte.
Agreed.
No doubt.
Yep. Falling, I think we have a few candidates for this one. So I definitely have the Ascension who continue to disappoint. Poor El Locale, I think, has to go on there.
So nobody in that match came out of it looking
except
better.
Kalisto. Except Kalisto. Let's put him on Rising. I'm putting Kalisto.
I guess we can't. If we want to be nice, I guess it's not his fault that he was in a shitty match with 3 other shitty people.
Yes.
Fucking badass El Locale. What the shit?
All right, now.
What are you doing?
falling, I would say Ascension. I almost want to say Tyson Kidd a little bit because he disappointed me a little bit. I was hoping he would surprise me. And, it's big douche energy. So I'll say Tyson Kidd. Any other parallelogram energy? Any other falling?
Probably Camacho. I mean,
Camacho, yeah.
He loses like a nothing match to Adam Rose. Like, doesn't really get any shine.
And khaki.
His gear is terrible.
And pleated khakis.
Whatever. Pleated khakis.
MVP, I have Charlotte for this one.
Oh, yes.
Pleated party style of Camacho.
I'm sorry, what?
MVP? Charlotte was your MVP.
Or Camacho, your MVP.
After Camacho.
Yeah,
after between, Bret Hart.
Bret and Ric Flair. Ric Flair's roller coaster of emotions, throwing his jacket and sobbing.
I don't know. You might make a good case there. swinging his jacket around and sobbing and jamming out to Charlotte's music.
Great.
That was spot for him in a minute. LVP, I guess it's kind of like my same falling. So I almost wanted to say Tyson Kidd, but I feel like that's a little harsh. Probably poor El Locale.
Yep.
For his janky lucha moves.
What is janky lucha moves? Yeah. Okay. Well, is it unsporting to give Mojo this nod, because he didn't have an actual match, mind you.
He did not have an actual match, but
he was on the show.
He was the least valuable person. Yeah,
he's far from valuable. In fact, disappointed his country, and managed to look like the biggest loser on a show that he's not even on the card. You know what I mean?
I think we got to put him in falling too. We forgot about him, but
yeah, we did.
That's right. Pretty rough. Oh my god, I love Mojo as like Jim Duggan, except like Jim Duggan would have come out and like did it and like succeeded for America, but instead Mojo is like
out with the, he wipes like, out Russo with a 2x4.
He's succeeded like impoverished, impoverished Duggan.
Mojo charges to the ring, gets kicked in the face,
put in the accolade,
and stretched. Up. Twice.
Yeah, imagine like Duggan goes to ring and Nikolai Volkov just whips his ass like
just super kicks him and puts him in a brutal looking submission.
Vince would never book such a thing.
And then he sells his way back up the ramp and gets wiped out again.
Okay. And then finally,
the wrestling game. Can you put that in a wrestling, like those characters?
Hey, that's some chicken salad right there.
Yeah.
Somebody play that match.
And create whoever you want.
Okay, good.
All right. Best moment I had Charlotte and the emotional roller coaster Ric Flair.
Yes.
After with that big win.
Oh, big emotions. Was so happy. It was so wonderful.
Big flares,
He threw his jacket, he sweat. He cried. cried too.
He was like overcome. He was verklempt.
He was like hemorrhaging tears, basically.
Okay, well, we have made it through this first ever NXT TakeOver. We have made it through.
It only took 3 hours.
We're doing
good. Going all right. All right.
Yeah. All right, Tim, what you got?
Well, this will get us to 3 hours. No, you know what? You heard about some of the shows I do during the break, during the live read, so check those out. They're on this very same podcast network, Place We Nation Wrestling. They're called Talkin' WCW, PTV NXT, which you're listening to right now. Our sister feed, Place B Nation Pop. I was on Making Mount Rushmore, the debut. And I guess I'll go ahead and spoil it. I was also on the second episode, but that's not coming out until a few weeks from now. But I will not be on every episode of that. It's a rotating panel. Check me out as well on the Jenny position, where I do the aforementioned Talk and Pop and the Journey Through Infinity. You can follow me on Twitter. I am at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E-6-8. I guess I should also mention on the North-South Connection podcast feed, yes, a different podcast feed, you should subscribe because I do a show with Jenny and our friend Sean Kidd called Shrink-Wrapped, Psychology of Superheroes, a new show, kind of experimental show, and we're going to have our second episode of that coming very soon. By the time you're hearing this, you can probably hear that within very short order. So, look forward to that if you are into comics. That'll do it.
Jen, you got anything to add?
Yeah, I've been working a lot on podcasting recently, as like everybody has, I think. Everybody we know has. I have a feed. It's called the Jenny Position. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but a couple of things you can find on there coming up is an episode of Bianca's First Time. My friend Bianca and I watched Top Gun, and it is her first viewing of that movie. Really awesome time with her, so check that one out. Coming up soon, you can also hear a new episode of You Heard About Pluto, where our friend Grooney and I watched Fear Factor on Pluto TV. So that was fun. And
I'm going to look forward to that.
Yeah, everybody will. On the Place of Nation Wrestling feed, there's another show of mine called Jenny and the Gems. We should have another one of those coming soon. And also talking WCW with me, you, Tim, and Greg. Well, so we have one of those coming up soon, too. You can follow me on Twitter at Jenny Position, and I'll link all my shows and everything there. And that's about it.
As for myself, I pretty much mentioned most of the podcasts I'm on at some other point during this. So I'll plug, I was recently on Laughing Theater on the Pop feed with Andy, and we watched the movie Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, which is a really awesome kind of awesome movie that I think kind of gets overlooked sometimes in that era of comedies, which is really good. A lot of fun movie music parodies in that movie. On Twitter, I'm Jambalaya underscore Jake. Other than that, that's all I got. So to wrap us up, for Ricardo Bennett and Trunk Mitchell, I am Howie Simpson.
Wow.
Everyone take care. Be safe. Rained, stick it up your Putin. Took us
all away. Keep on trunking.
I took my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana and was blowing sad while Bobby sang the blues. With them windshield wipers slapping time and Bobby clapping hands, we finally sang or failed the song that driver knew. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing ain't worth nothing, but it's free. Feeling good was easy, Lord, when Bobby sang the blues. Feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and Bobby McGee. From the coal mines of Kentucky to the California sun, Bobby shared the secrets of my soul. Standing right beside me, Lord, to everything I'd done. Every night she kept me from the cold. Then somewhere near Selena's, Lord, I let her slip away. Looking for the home I hope she'll find. And I'd trade all my tomorrows for a single yesterday. Holding Bobby's body next to mine. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing left is all she left for me. Feeling good was easy, Lord, when Bobby sang the blues. Buddy, that was good enough for me. Good enough for me and Bobby McGee. La da 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 me and Bobby McGee. La da 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 me and Bobby McGee. La da 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 me and Bobby.
Virginia, the football star from the University of Maryland. Rusev looks absolutely disgusting.
Now hold on 1 second, Rusev. I'm hearing a lot of hype right now about Russia. But right here, we're in the USA. And in the USA, we don't get hype. We stay! And I think right about now, it's time that someone comes down to that ring and show